But first, Carl Honoré on changing your life by slowing it down. Honoré is known as the unofficial godfather of the slowness movement, a worldwide campaign that took off after Honoré wrote a book called In Praise of Slowness. It started when a group of Italian chefs embraced the concept of slow food. Today, slow is a philosophy that's gone far beyond food.
I talk about it as a cultural revolution, if you like, and I know that those are very big words, but I think that they're apt here. It seems to me that if you go back to the end of the 19th century, when the culture of acceleration really got into full swing, you had the emergence of the futurists, for instance, in Italy, who glorified speed, who talked about the beauty of speed, that speed became an end in itself. You go to the end of the 20th century, and it seems to me we've come out the other end of that upward curve of acceleration, where we're saying to ourselves now, right across the planet, at every socioeconomic level, people are saying, you know what, speed is great, you know, speed is good, it has a lot to offer, but it's not always the best policy, and that it's time to remember that slow has a role to play, that slow is a good thing, and we need to reconnect with our inner tortoise, if you like. And I think that the 20th century was all about unleashing our inner hare. Now it's time for the tortoise to come up alongside the hare so that we have both. We have moments when we're fast, and we have moments when we're slow. And really what slow is about, when you drill down to the bottom of it, is about doing things at the right speed and doing things at what the musicians call the tempo giusto, the correct tempo or pace that every moment or person or activity has.
You first brought the beginning slowness movement to the public's attention with a book you wrote 5 years ago or so. How's it changed in the intervening time?
Well, it's been an extraordinary ride, and it's just astonishing to me how many different ways around the world people are taking this idea of slow and finding ways to apply it to, you know, the blossoming of movements like slow design, slow fashion, slow parenting, slow travel is huge at the moment. And it's extraordinary, really. It's really quite inspiring to think that this is, I mean, it's a paradox in a way that the slow movement is growing so fast. but in a way, that's good fast. That's what we're talking about here, that there are moments of, you know, good slow and bad slow, and there are moments of good fast and bad fast. And I'm relieved and pleased, I think, to see the slow movement growing strongly. And people getting it.
So what are some of these new avenues of slowness that are opening up? You mentioned slow fashion, slow design. What are those?
Yeah, well, slow design is looking at how we make things, and that's every link in the chain. So when you're thinking, and again, this is coming back to the slow idea of what you do affects everything around you, the bigger picture. So you something that's slow design is about making it with products that, you know, and don't harm the environment, or maybe they're fair traded on an economic level with the people you're acquiring the raw materials from. And then they're made in a way that they're designed not to be disposable and throwaway. They may even be products that encourage people to slow down, you know, a big comfortable bench that you place in a waiting room or something. So people are bringing this idea of also the creative impulse that we have as human beings is very much allied to slowness, because it's when the brain is in a relaxed state that the brain waves begin to move out in richer, more nuanced, more creative patterns. And that's when you get those eureka moments. So slow design is also about taking a deep breath and letting things happen, you know, letting that inventive spark occur and then going with it at the right speed and so on, and making things not necessarily on a huge industrial scale, but maybe making them on a smaller scale.
You mentioned slow parenting. What's that?
Well, I think that's taking the same slow idea and applying it to child rearing. I think that the virus of hurry has infected the way we think about children. And you see it in the school system, where kids are crammed with academic learning younger and younger and then tested over and over and over again. Homework piled high. And of course, technology. I mean, children wired from the moment they're out of the womb. You've got them being placed in front of screens to watch baby TV or baby Einstein DVDs and so on. And I think there's a wealth of evidence that suggests that that is not the best way for children to develop. And so the slow philosophy comes to bear in the sense of saying, well, it's about finding a balance. Some technology is fine, and of course you have to give children a push from now and again, but they also need slowness. In fact, I think children probably need slowness more than adults do, because it's in those unstructured, free play moments that kids learn how to think creatively, how to invent, how to get along with each other. It's when they learn how to take pleasure from things. And it's when they learn, maybe most importantly of all, who they are rather than what we want them to be. You know, understand that each child has his or her own tempo giusto, you know, their own rhythm. And some children will be late bloomers and others will learn things at different rates. The childhood should not be a rat race. It's not a dash to a finish line. It's much more complex and blurry and fuzzy. And in the end, much more thrilling and enriching because of that, I think. It's not full speed ahead.
Now, another aspect of the worldwide slow movement is slow travel.
Yes, that's something you're seeing a lot of now. And that's the reaction against the fast-forward approach to travel, where you hop on a plane, you fly somewhere, you do 50 things, you have lunch, you fly back the next day, and you've just passed through in a blur and also taken a heavy toll on the environment as well. And slow travel is about taking some of that heat out of the way we move around the world. And so it can start with how you get from A to B. Rather than jumping on a plane, maybe you take a bus or cycle, or, you know, obviously not all destinations that works for, but you enjoy the journey as much as the destination, because that's another part of slow. It's about appreciating getting from A to B rather than instantly wanting always to be at B. So slow travel is about enjoying the trip, the anticipation, the build-up, looking forward to arriving in the place. And then when you actually arrive at the place, not overstuffing your schedule and trying to see every single site listed in the tourist guides, but maybe picking two or three and spending time there, just sitting on a bench, soaking up the architecture or listening to the local voices and taking in the smells, and also having a more real and local experience, because so much of what our fast-forward culture is about is the rubbing away of local wrinkles. You go everywhere now and there's a Gap, there's a Starbucks, everything is the same, the same hotel chains. And I guess slow travel is about finding the unique, ungoogleable, if you like, the fine grain of a place. And that takes time to find those details, because when you're rushing through, everything becomes a blur. It's when you slow down that you really engage. It's really when you have those moments, those sometimes very small, simple, even free moments that burn themselves into your memory and become lifetime memories to look back on. So there's been a big push for slow travel in the United States, but around the world, and people rethinking how we get around the planet and what we make of the places when we actually get there. And of course, as an addendum to that, with the skyrocketing price of fuel now, you're finding that planes are flying more slowly to conserve energy, and buses are traveling more slowly, and people are driving more slowly. And so there's almost a kind of compulsion now to slow down. The system is forcing us to slow down. So I think that's an interesting little bit of grit in the argument now, and it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, if people chafe against that and find it really irritating, or if it helps them, if it guides them into seeing the joys of taking things a little bit more slowly, traveling a bit more slowly.
How has the slow movement and your interest in it changed your own lifestyle? What does slowness look like when you put it into practice?
It's a funny thing, actually. On the surface, you might think that I haven't slowed down at all, because I travel and I write and I talk. I have a full life. But actually, when you inhabit my life, it feels very different. There's a very clear before and after for me. Before, I was always trying to do more and more things more and more quickly. I never said no to anything. Whereas today, I still do a lot of things, but I don't do too many things. And I always try and give, wherever possible, the time that each thing deserves. It's funny, it's a hard thing to measure, but I used to feel constantly worried about the time and feel rushed. I almost never feel that way anymore. And the irony is that I seem to get a lot more done, which is the beauty of slow, is that often slow is a lot more productive than fast.
Carl Honoré is the unofficial godfather of the worldwide slowness movement. His first book on the subject was In Praise of Slowness. His most recent, on slow parenting, is called Under Pressure, and he's the founder of the Slow Planet website.